Hello, and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs. I am joined with my co-host, Natalie Bellini, and we have an exciting episode with a lot of info with GLP-1 type of drugs. So starting with, we've got a new trial with orforglipron that was just published. So this is called the ACHIEVE-3 trial. We had previously heard top-line results, but orforglipron is actually a non-peptide GLP-1 agonist. And as a reminder, what that means is that it doesn't have the same restrictions that the semaglutide oral has in terms of it doesn't get degraded so quickly by the body, and we don't have to separate it from food, from drinks, from other pills. It can be taken once a day with all of those other types of things. So it actually went head to head though versus oral semaglutide. And Natalie, you want to share a little bit about this trial and what happened?
Sure. So The Lancet published the results from this phase 3, right? Phase 3 is a good thing. ACHIEVE-3 trial that had 1,698 patients, and it was head to head, which is daring because you don't always know if you're going to actually, you know, end up in a better position or not, right? Is it going to be inferior? Is it going to be equal? Or is it going to be superior, right? So they looked at people already taking metformin, achieved mean A1C reductions of 1.7 and 1.9 on the 12 and 36 milligrams of the orforglipron, and respectively, this compared to 1.2 and 1.5 on the oral semaglutide, 7 and 14 milligrams. So it was superior, which is pretty amazing, actually. All primary non-inferior comparisons were met with both orforglipron doses showing non-inferiority to both semaglutide doses. So what do we say about that? The side effect profile. You go, okay, we see a little more. We see a higher A1C reduction. We see, right, we'll start looking at weight to go with this. There was more GI side effects with the orforglipron, which I think is interesting, right? Substantially more at 59 and 58% on the 12 and 36 milligram doses. So respectively compared with 37 and 45 milligrams on semaglutide 7 and 14. That is significant, Diana. What did you think when you read those? Because I was like, whoa, that's a lot of GI.
Yeah, well, it begs the question kind of the dose titration. Because I would like to know a little bit more, I guess, of when they lump the side effects together, is it just when the dose is initially started or when it's increased versus long-term, do people tolerate it better? I mean, certainly, though, that's an important consideration. If people don't tolerate it as well, then even if it has more glucose lowering and more weight loss, that's not going to be something that everyone is going to want to have. So.
Absolutely. Right. And that's just the point. It's kind of like there's never going to be one drug for everyone. Right. I love that idea of just, okay, but that means people didn't have nausea or GI side effects, and those people are going to do very well on it. Right. So I think that is interesting, though, that it was significant enough that what do we do? I mean, I typically give a little bit of Zofran, right, sublingual, to people who struggle when the dose titrates up. And so we're going to have to dive a little bit deeper into this. Is it all the time? Is it just for the first few days of titration? And we need to remember always in trials, they ask if you've had nausea. And even if you report it one time, it's considered that you've had nausea, right? So that is always should be in the back of our heads as we look at these trials, that we ask when, it's not a, I had it 50% of the time or more, or I had it for 3 days or more. It's literally, if you report it once, it's reportable. And so that's always my thought when we're looking at trial data.
Right. I think also overall, the discontinuation rates related to GI side effects were not very large. So it was 6% in the orforglipron group versus 3% in the oral semaglutide group. So yes, it is greater, but overall, most people did stay in the trial. So I think that is very encouraging.
I agree. Right. So even if you have nausea, is it severe enough that you had to stop it or not? And again, 3 to 6% is double, but it's still a low number overall.
Right. So I think that is good. And we know there's different things we can do to kind of help people get through this. There's other drugs that we can prescribe, at least in that initial time period, if they're having nausea or vomiting, or they're having diarrhea or constipation. But it definitely is interesting that there's more, suggesting that maybe some of it is related to its potency, right? It's more effective, but also it may be, have more side effects as well.
Absolutely. And as we say with all of these trials, guess what we're going to say here? More to come, right? I mean, this is, it makes me start to look at the meetings that we're going to be attending this year. What are we going to see at ADA read out? Where are we going to, what does approval look like? Those kinds of things. And so because this is a phase three trial, are we going to get it before the end of the year?
Exciting. Yeah, well, supposedly it's been actually submitted to regulators in over 40 countries, including the U.S., where it's expected to have an action in the second half of the year.
Yeah,
The original indication they're pursuing is going to be for obesity. But very, very interesting. I mean, I am kind of blown away the fact that the higher doses, the 36 milligrams, had that 2.2% A1C lowering versus the 1.4 with the 14 milligram semaglutide. Of course, there is going to be a higher dose. There already is a higher dose. There's the 25 milligrams of semaglutide. So it didn't go head to head with that. So that, of course, is a limitation of it. So we don't know how those compare. But you're exactly right. More to come. I do think this would be a really nice option to have. I think the oral, especially the oral semaglutide, now that it's kind of been renamed. So for obesity, it's just the oral Wegovy. And now for diabetes, there's going to be the oral Ozempic. And I think that name recognition is really helping people and encouraging people like, hey, I wanted to do the oral, versus when it was just called Rybelsus. I think there was a lot of like, oh, I don't know what this is. I don't know if I want to use it or not.
Ozempic has done a very good job or Novo Nordisk has done a great job of name branding the efficacy of Ozempic, right? And the other indications with, all the other benefits that we've talked about over the last year or so, right? Like, or 2 years now even, right? With osteoarthritis, with MASLD, with the flow trial, with, right? And every time they've come back out and said, this is semaglutide, this is Ozempic, this is, right, Wegovy, this is reduction in cardiovascular risk, this is, right? So now I've never had a person come in and say, I would like Rybelsus, ever. But I do have people now coming in to say, I heard Ozempic comes in a pill now, right? And amazingly quickly too. I mean, within weeks of it happening, I'm now having people come in and ask for it by name as a pill. So that's very interesting to me.
Yeah, the oral Wegovy is available now. The last thing I want to just touch upon, though, is of course, the cardiovascular outcome data, which we don't have for orforglipron. We don't have it resulted. We don't know how that will play out. And I do think that's a very important consideration. So oral semaglutide has been studied, and based on the SOUL trial, it does have the indication for cardiovascular disease. And in fact, based on the positive data also in SELECT, even the version for weight management also has the cardiovascular indication. So certainly for one that has cardiovascular disease, even if orforglipron is more potent, I think we just don't know yet how that will play out with the molecule. And we have certainly been burned with other molecules in the past. Even weight and glucose is certainly a surrogate outcome, right? So we want to see the cardiovascular outcome data. I know eventually we will have that, but that may be another reason to kind of distinguish the two if they're both
absolutely available. When you go to pick what is, absolutely, we need to be careful and stick to, there's what is the most important, and you know, people with diabetes have a higher, people with overweight and obese as part of their co-diagnoses, depending on who we're seeing in front of us, all have a higher risk of cardiovascular disease, right? So that is, you know, and is, do you already have it? Is it your parents? Is it your brother? Is it, those all increase your risk. And are you going to use a molecule that has proven efficacy in that? We do here at our practice. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, that we have more data that we want to talk about. So that was very exciting about the Achieve 3 study being published, but also we have a study that this is top line data, so it's not fully published yet, but with retatrutide and osteoarthritis. And so this has actually been studied in people with osteoarthritis, and this is a phase 3 trial as well. And this was called the TRIUMPH-4 trial. So in this trial, they looked at retatrutide in people with obesity and osteoarthritis, and they looked at this over 68 weeks. And what they showed was that retatrutide delivered weight loss up to an average of 71.2 pounds with the highest dose, which was the 12 milligrams dose. This was 28.7% of body weight. I mean, that is mind-blowing to me.
Incredible. Incredible.
A lot of body weight. Now, the BMI to start with was 40, and the average weight to start with was 248 pounds. So these people definitely had the weight to lose, but that, I mean, I've never seen anything like that in trial. Yep. Even the lower dose, the retatrutide 9 milligrams, had 26.4% weight loss. And of course, we compared this to placebo because in these trials, people are also being given education, lifestyle interventions. In the placebo group, there was 2.1%. So nothing near this 26 and 28%. Really, really incredible. And so then not surprisingly, they also did this testing to see how people's osteoarthritis has been affected. And there were huge, huge improvements. There's something called the WOMAC scale. And this basically looks at, this is a patient-reported questionnaire that's been validated for osteoarthritis. And it looks at pain, stiffness, physical function, and provides scoring based on that. In the past, we actually had a study there. With semaglutide, I think, with osteoarthritis, also showing positive benefits. But this kind of weight loss, I mean, it is mind-blowing to me. Natalie, what do you think?
I mean, one out of every 8 retatrutide patients completely free of knee pain at the end of the trial, 1 out of 8, right? So this is impressive. This is, you know, I'm excited about this, right? Yeah. And it's, again, it's very interesting because Lily said during this relief, because remember, this is only top line. So we can't tell you that the weight loss happened for the first 52 weeks and then it stabilized. We don't know yet because we can't see that part of it. But they did announce that there are 7 additional phase 3 trials evaluating the investigational once weekly treatment in obesity and type 2, all expected to complete in 2026. This is going to be a big year for this this molecule. It really is big year. I mean, 7 additional. That's like, you know, we do a podcast every couple of weeks. That's like a lot of our podcasts talking about this medication and its efficacy at all different levels. They didn't get into a lot of details about which trials, but they did say that. And I was taken back by that. I would have said 2 or 3 others. Here we go. No, this is full gears in place going to try and get these trials completed.
Yeah. I mean, that is so exciting. And really, this is such a novel medication because it's a triple agonist. So it's not just GLP-1 and GIP, it's now also a glucagon agonist. And so it appears that by being a triple agonist, it seems to be superior with weight loss. And that's pretty awesome.
So now, one more thing I want to just touch base on because it was so impressive, the secondary endpoints, right? Achieved greater than or equal to 25% weight loss, 47%. 47% on the 9 milligram dose, 58% on the 12 milligram dose, 30% weight loss, 30% of people on the 9 milligram, 39% on the 12 milligram. So Like, you might not even have to go to the higher dose here, right? And then 35% weight loss, 18.2% on that 9 milligram dose, 23.7% on that 12 milligram dose. So the WOMAC score actually didn't change much between the two doses, right? Minus 1.1 points on the 9 and 4.2 on the higher dose, right? So that, me, the weight loss is significant across the board, even at the lower dose. So let's say someone has some of that nausea and they just don't want to go up. I could feel completely confident, just based on top line results, that I'm going to get some achievable weight loss, significant achievable weight loss.
Yeah, those are really good points. And, you know, as I'm looking at this, also just always good to kind of peruse the adverse effects that they've mentioned. And similar to what we've seen with other things, the nausea is really the most common. 38.1% with the 9 milligram, 43% with the 12 milligram. Placebo had 10% though. So clearly, right, there's just, there's other reasons for nausea other than the medication. We see something similar with diarrhea. There's higher rates. There was also a pretty good amount of constipation in here as well. When it comes to discontinuation rates, it was actually 12% with the lower dose, the 9 milligram, 18% with the 12 milligram, and then 4% with placebo. So there was greater discontinuation rates. I think we do need to be mindful of the side effect profile. And it'll always, I guess we never know fully until it gets into the real world, but it's definitely very exciting. And hopefully we will see this come to market at some point.
Can meet with a dietitian and help really with the, what can we do besides giving an anti-nausea medicine, besides giving I have some diarrhea or constipation, right? But what about diet itself? You know, I mean, this is, when I talk to people about using any of these, this whole class of medications, I always say, we're going to open a window to help you, but it's up to you to find that door, right? We can help you to a certain extent, but changing your diet and making it so that it reduces, you know, very high fat meals people struggle with, right? So can you never have a French fry again? Absolutely not. But what we say is, you know, it may make you sick if you eat a full order now. Right? That amount of fat at any given time, a larger meal may very well make you feel more nauseous if we, you know, so using a diabetes care and education specialist who specializes in even a little bit of nutritional background. I mean, I would love everyone to see a registered dietitian at least once to really work through what are the foods I love? What kind of fat content am I looking at? What about volume to really reduce those side effects as opposed to, you know, suffering from them and then stopping it, right? There's a real role for that. And you know, as both of us have started our careers as diabetes care and continue to be education specialists in the background of everything that we do, it's super important to offer, if you can, that side of it.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. And as more molecules come out, that conversation is going to be even more important. And we need more dietitians and just more people all around. Since we are on this topic, I think this has just been a really big week with a lot of news about this medication class, but Novo actually put out some top line news as well about their triple agonist. So this is so interesting because we've heard about retatrutide and we're like triple G, but Novo actually is also studying an agent. It's a triple agonist. It doesn't have a name. It's UBT251 right now. But they actually did a trial in China over 24 weeks. This is phase two. So this is not as advanced as being in phase three. But in this pretty short trial, I mean, only 24 weeks compared to the one we just talked about, which was 68 weeks, there was 19.7% weight loss that was observed. So, I mean, this is kind of exciting also that this is being studied in this way. This is something that they're working with another company to put together. And this is also a weekly injectable. It comes in 2, 4, and 6 milligram doses. And all of those doses were compared to placebo. And they were able to show that the highest dose had that 19.7% weight loss compared to just 2% in that placebo group. So, Natalie, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, here we go, right? This is amazing. In a very short period of time, that weight loss, so don't compare this. You can't look at this and go, well, the Lilly product, but that was over weeks and weeks and weeks, right? This is a very short term, so you have to keep that in mind. But it also showed significant improvements from placebo and all the secondary endpoints as well, waist circumference, blood glucose, blood pressure, as well as lipids. So, you know, when we think about people with overweight and obese as part of their, and diabetes as part of their diagnoses, right, we look at increased risk of cardiovascular disease, and all of those individual factors increase the risk of earlier cardiovascular disease, right? So it because that is that there's statistically significant improvements really makes me excited about this molecule. But again, super top line results. I bet we're going to hear more later this year, though.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. And I think it just this, I mean, ADA this year, I'm sure is going to be huge. That's in June. And I look forward to probably we'll see a lot of this type of data being presented at SAI sessions. But it's just great, this pipeline. I mean, we're already so happy that we have semaglutide and tirzepatide. Both of those have been total game changers. And now we have all this other stuff coming forward. I really am optimistic for people with type 2 diabetes, as well as people with overweight obesity. I really think we're going to make a big dent on those populations. And ultimately, hopefully, we'll be able to use these drugs also for people with type 1 as well. But definitely, we can reduce the rates of people with type 2 diabetes.
I love it. Yep. That's the whole goal, right? Is treat the disease and reduce those cardiovascular risks on top of it all. Yeah. Very exciting times.
Very, very exciting. And then the last thing, which I debated to even bring up, but I think it was been in the news, we should talk about it, is just that also kind of announced this past week is Novo is decreasing their list prices pretty significantly. So this isn't going into effect until 2027. So it's kind of like, but it's still certainly encouraging. So what they've said is that their list price for their products like Wegovy, Ozempic, Rybelsus is going to be $675, which of course is still pretty large, right? But that is a lot better than the over $1,000 that it is currently listed at. So that is very interesting. Of course, the reason why I was kind of hesitant, like, do we even talk about this, is because our whole drug pricing is very convoluted. And I don't think most people are paying $1,000. Like, you know, it depends on so many things. Also, though, because Novo has a direct program, Lilly has a direct program, that I think if someone doesn't have insurance coverage, they're not paying $1,000. They're going to be paying what you can get through that those direct programs, or you're going to be paying what you get through GoodRx. So it's hard to really know.
Right. What this is really going to mean at the bottom dollar when you go to the pharmacy or wherever you go to pick up your medication is that, right, you're absolutely right, Diana. This is, yeah. And we debated whether we should bring it up or not. And yet, I think it's important to say the more medications in this class, in this GLP, GIP, glucagon, all of it, the better it's going to be for the person living with overweight, obese, or diabetes, because there will be some competition. And that really does make a difference in the long run, I think. I think that's really the point, is that it will help drive prices down, which is what we're looking for.
Yeah. And I think, right. I mean, it's supposed to be also when orforglipron hopefully gets approved, that is, they've been saying would be a lower price, like $149. So I think that the pricing's encouraging. Of course, this week we already talked about it, but having the Zepbound quick pen is also a good thing, with has a reduced pricing on the Lilly Direct program. So we're seeing more molecules are coming, pricing is getting better. And all of that is good, because the other thing thrown in here is the fact that some of our older generations, like liraglutide, Victoza, is generic now. But I don't want people to have to use that. Like, I don't want someone to use a daily medication that is not as a daily injectable, I should say, that's not as effective as these newer agents. So I'm glad that the prices of the newer agents are coming down.
Yes, I 100% agree there. It'll be interesting. It's going to be an amazing couple of years, right? That's what I can say. As we drive prices down, as we increase indications, right? Whoever thought that, for example, Tirzepatide would be approved for sleep apnea for people with overweight or obese, for example, right? Whoever thought, right? Like, you couldn't have asked me to predict that 5 years ago with anything at all, right? No way would I have said that. So I think that's where we've just opened up this amazing, this class of medications going as a general umbrella, and where are the benefits? I think it's at this point, I still see it as limitless, right? Kidney, liver, heart, blood vessels, right? Sleep apnea. I mean, you know, osteoarthritis,
right?
You know, we, there is such potential. We now the goal is to make them affordable. I don't want to have to go back. And, you know, we don't see the same weight loss with liraglutide. We don't.
No.
And so it's certainly not FDA approved for sleep apnea. It's certainly not FDA approved. You know, there's no flow trial with, you know, there's no, you know, all of those things that we've.
Right. That was just updating slides, and based liraglutide is 6% weight loss in people with type 2 diabetes. So when you compare to like what we just talked about with retatrutide, like that just sounds like it's
triple.
Oh, that's good.
Triple the weight loss plus, right? Like that's not a little bit, you know,
right.
Argue, okay, 1% extra here or 2% extra there. Is there really a significant difference in between two different medications? We're talking 6 to 24%, right? Like that's 4 times the weight loss. I would sign up for the 4 times 100% of the time.
Yeah. Well, this has been a great discussion. So much good news this week. We thank you all for tuning in. And that wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives.
Thanks, everyone.